Let me proceed on established protocol and just say, distinguished ladies and gentlemen, thank you for this call to update us on issues to do with the National Peace Council. I was vice president when the whole discussion on the National Peace Council, started. And we work very closely with the United Nations office here to decide what our peace architecture should look like. And eventually, the Peace Council was formed. I think since 2011, it has worked hard and it's become unique in terms of our peace architecture. And so many countries have looked at what we have and are trying to structure their peace architecture based on our establishment of the National Peace Council. And so I want to congratulate you. Since, as you said, we inaugurated your board in April, we've not had the opportunity to meet and have a discussion. So I'm happy that we could spare this time to meet with you at a time when all of us are concerned about the proliferation of conflicts across our country. There's a rising intolerance, you find, and it's resulting as a result of disagreements, first and foremost to do with chieftaincy. You find a traditional area that has been at peace for so many years and a ruler who has been on the stool for decades. And then as soon as he dies, there is a competition and suddenly a chieftaincy dispute arises and lack of tolerance and misunderstanding. Sometimes it breaks out into violence. It is putting a lot of pressure on our security services. A lot of our security services are tied down in conflict areas. I mean, Sampa, we have a whole contingent there. You go to Nkwanta, we have a whole contingent there. You go to Boko, we have a whole contingent there. Recently, Savannah, we had a whole contingent there. We've not withdrawn them yet. And yet there are so many of these, all over the country. It have to do with ethnic disputes, have to do with land disputes. And it's become a major, major headache for government. And so that's why we need to resource the Peace Council, to be able to carry out its mandate in terms of trying to arbitrate some of these misunderstandings. I'm happy that we continue to recognize the blessing God has given us in terms of religious tolerance and religious coexistence. It's one of the beauties of Ghana that we have different religions and yet we live together peacefully. Most of the conflicts we have do not stem from religious differences. Most of them stem, from chieftaincy and land disputes. And so we continue to thank God for the religious coexistence. And let me congratulate you on the MOU that was signed in respect of the faith-based schools. That has been a point of contention for quite a while. And so we took note that somebody filed a case before the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is yet to pronounce on that issue. But if you read what the faith-based organizations agreed in their own MOU, I don't see any point of dispute. They all accept that if there's a mission school, it has its, faith orientation. But within that faith orientation, there must be recognition of diversity. It's right there in the MOU. So I don't want to suggest it, but I think the Supreme Court has its work cut out for it because the same people have signed an MOU. And so I don't see what the contention there is. And there's even a place that talks about fasting. Because Christians fast, Muslims fast. You can find a Christian student in a Muslim school or a Muslim student in a Christian school. And he talks about whether they should be allowed to fast. And he says that, yes, the student can fast if the parents inform the school that they want their ward to fast. And if there's any health consequences from the fasting, the responsibility shall be that of the parent and not the school. I mean, that's clear enough, you know. So I think that it's something that we can be proud of. And I want to congratulate the Peace Council for being the facilitators of that understanding between the faith-based institutions. We must go back to the root causes of conflict, and that includes economic exclusion, lack of opportunity for young people, and so many other things. And so government to bear some responsibility to ensure that we manage the economy properly so that we're creating opportunities for people to be able to earn an income, to be able to look for after themselves. And that's why our focus has been on stabilizing the economy in the last 11 months. And thanks to God, we are seeing some light at the end of the tunnel. The economy is appearing stable. We've been upgraded in terms of our credit rating, and inflation has come down to single digits. We're expecting that by the end of the year, it will come below 6% if possible. The CD has appreciated in value, and cost of living has slowed down. The increase in cost of living has slowed down. Prices of food on the market have, you know, reduced. Actually, the cause for the reducing inflation is the food basket. The abatement of increase of prices in the food basket is what is affecting the general downward trend of inflation. And so if we should not keep take our eyes off the ball, we must continue to look at that. We're implementing the big push, and we're investing a lot of money, especially in the road sector. And contractors who were sitting with workers laid off suddenly are hiring again. And so they're hiring civil engineers, technicians, machine operators, you know, and steel benders, masons, carpenters, electricians, plumbers. And so it's going to create a multiplier effect on the economy, because the monies that we pay, I mean, if contractors are working, they are hiring drivers, you know, for their tipper trucks. They are maintaining their tipper trucks. So fitters and auto mechanics will also get work to do. They'll buy cement, and so cement suppliers will get work to do. They'll buy iron rods. They'll buy fuel. Fuel station owners will also be able to sell products. You know, women will set up cooking stands, wachi, to sell to the workers and kinky. And then, you know, contractors will give their wives money to go and do their hair. And so the hairdresser too will make money. They'll give them money to shop, so the boutique owner to sell dresses. So it has a multiplier effect on the economy. And we believe that that will give a stimulus for creating more jobs, not only in the construction sector, but in many other sectors. We are implementing decentralization properly. And so if you notice, 80% of the district assembly common fund is being sent directly to the districts. And so you don't hear too many complaints coming out of the district, because some of them have money they have not even spent, and the year is coming to an end, you know. And so they are able to award their own contracts at the district level, instead of before, where there was that centralization. And the district and the administration common fund administrator would be the one to give you a contract to go to Bole Bamboe and go and build a classroom block there. This time, the districts themselves are awarding their own classroom blocks and other district-level infrastructure. But we live in a sub-region, and so people say we're an oasis of peace in a turbulent sub-region. And there are two new developments. One is the penchant for coup d'etats, and you saw what happened in Benin recently and Guinea-Bissau. And so it's something that the regional body, you know, has to look at. Happily, we have an ECOWAS meeting coming up on the 14th, so I'm sure that that is going to be a major point of this discussion. But like I've always said, for those of us who practice democratic governance, we must let our people have faith that democratic governments can deliver the kind of opportunity and development that they are looking for. it's when they lose faith, and that was beginning to happen, you know, in the run-up to the campaign of last year. You could see a certain cynicism where young people said, look, even this voting is useless. I go and vote every 4 years and I don't see what difference it makes into our lives. And so one of my major campaign messages was that, look, we have a last opportunity to keep the faith and trust of our people in the political elites. Otherwise, Ghana is not immune to coup d'etats. And so that is why this government is doing its best to make sure that we regain the trust of the people, one, by being accountable ourselves, and two, by holding persons who have held office and abused the public trust to account. I don't enjoy prosecuting people, but I mean, the people of Ghana will not forgive us if people develop impunity in terms of abusing the trust that people have put in them. And so that's why we're resourcing the Economic and Organized Crime Office and the other anti-corruption institutions, including the Office of the Special Prosecutor. And recently, there have been some controversy with the Office of the Special Prosecutor. I think it's premature to call for the closure of that office. The unique thing about that office is it is the only anti-corruption agency that has prosecutorial powers to be able to prosecute themselves without going through the Attorney General. And so people had mistrust for the Attorney General because the Attorney General normally is a member of government and is a minister of state. And so they believe that the Attorney General will be very reluctant to prosecute his own. But if there's an independent office like the Office of the Special Prosecutor, it don't matter who you are. Because they have security of tenure and they have prosecutor powers, whether you're a member of government or you're a member of a previous government or you are anybody who has, you know, misappropriated public funds, they have the law is behind them to be able to prosecute you. So I think we should give them a little time, you know. Of course, people want to see, you know, more prosecutions and more results. And so I'll just urge the OSP to speed up, you know, some of these investigations and, you know, show people that the office is still very relevant. And so, aside from that, we have the issue of the Sahel. It continues to be a major problem. Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger. And these are our northern neighbors. And so we need to keep an eye on what happens there. Incidentally, the violent extremism and the, you know, jihadists and whatever is happening there is just on the border where we have the difficulty with the Boko affair. And so it makes us vulnerable, you know, when you have a conflict or crisis in an area that is so sensitive, you know, in terms of our security, of our national territory. And that is why it is important for us to, you know, try and get a handle on the Boko issue as quickly as possible. I want to express my appreciation to the Otunfo for the role that he has played. We came into office and the previous governments informed me that they had asked Otunfo to mediate. And so when I met him, he confirmed that yes, he had been asked to mediate in the conflict. And so we said, okay, we'll give opportunity for that mediation to take place. So we've been managing the crisis, I mean, sporadic killings here and there, waiting for the outcome of the mediation process. Happily, the Otunfo has signaled to me that on the 16th, he would come here to the presidency. I'll invite you, the National Peace Council. I invite the Executive Committee of the House of Chiefs and then other, you know, recognized bodies, religious leaders, and we will receive the mediation report together and consequently, whatever actions need to be taken to implement the reports, we would all, you know exactly what we're going to do. And so we have to be prepared. We haven't had any direct confrontation from any of the violent extremists, but it's not a question of if, it's a question of when, because I mean, we cannot say we are immune to what is happening there. And that's why we need to prepare our security services so that they can defend the country in case of any incursion. And so recently we've started the retooling of the security services. We acquired some armored vehicles for the police. We're doing same for the Air Force, and we're acquiring, different ordinances, for our services, so that in the event that anything happens, we don't only give them the mandate, but we give them the capacity to be able to fulfill the mandate. And so that's what we're doing. Like the minister said, you've acquired the land. And so I think you must work with your minister to see how we can begin to raise the resources to put up the headquarters. It must be a model headquarters, that sends out a signal of peace to the whole country. We should be able to come and visit you in your headquarters and have a dashboard showing us the conflicts you've resolved in different places and all that. And so, of course, you have my support when it comes to that. We'll look at the issue of the peace fund, and we'll work together to see how we can kickstart it and populate the fund with some resources. The final thing I'll talk about is the constitutional review exercise. And that is an important agenda that's formed a major part of the 2024 campaign. Both parties agreed that the 1992 constitution has served us well, but the time has come for us to take a look at it again. And so we all pledged that if we won, we would, set up constitutional review committees. And so I had the opportunity to do that. And so we provided them with the Fiajo committee report and the white paper, and then also with the reports that was commissioned by the previous administration. And they met me 2 weeks ago and gave me a presentation of some of the findings they were going to make. Yeah, quite interesting. I was sworn to silence. And they intend to present the final report on the 22nd of December. And so once the final report is presented, we would, make it known to the rest of the nation. And so I should hold my peace. I don't want to be like my daughter, who I reached an agreement with her not to let her mother know something. And then her mother came and we were sitting, and she said, Friday said, "Daddy, I want to tell mommy." I said, "Oh, but we agreed that you won't tell mommy." I said, "That is not me, it's my mouth. My mouth is saying that I should tell." And so my mouth is telling me to tell, but I'll hold my peace till 22nd. When I receive the report, I'm sure we'll publish it and everybody will get to know. I think they've done a fairly good job. Some of the, amendments seem quite radical, but I do think that the justification behind them would make Ghanaians understand the need for us to do what we have to do. So thank you very much once again. And I just want to encourage you to continue the good work you're doing, even in challenging circumstances. And I'm sure that, I don't want to say your reward is in heaven, but as Apostle Nyami said, Reverend Fianu have been telling us, God is watching what you are doing and he will reward you appropriately. Thank you very much.